Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hello, and welcome to What Goes Up, a Bloomberg Weekly Markets podcast. I'm Sarah Poncek, a reporter on the Cross Asset team.
And I'm Mike Regan, a senior editor at Bloomberg and Sarah's official wingman.
Official wingman. I like that, Mike. We'll go with that from now on.
That's my new title.
Yeah. New wingman. This week on the show, our hopes running high. On Monday, news of a promising vaccine trial sent risk assets soaring. But by Tuesday, there were already critical reports of the progress, and we saw some of the optimism reverse. As states and countries reopen, everyone is, of course, hoping for the best. But what should be expected of reality?
The eternal question, Sarah, what should be expected of reality?
Hey, I wish we knew.
before I introduce our guest, I understand you have a special announcement to make.
I do have a very special announcement to make, and I must say that this is the first on the podcast, but we have to give a very special birthday shout out to Michael Gross. So from Mike and I, my wingman and me, we both have that you have a wonderful birthday weekend, a great Memorial Day weekend. And I've also got to say that your fiance is pretty awesome.
So the fiance tracked you down asking for a birthday shout out.
She did. And I said, of course, we'll give him one.
Of course. She's a keeper there, Mr. Michael Gross, wherever you are. I got to say, I don't think we should make it a tradition to give too many birthday shout outs on the show. But since you set the precedent, Sarah, I'm going to give a birthday shout out to a person who turned 0 years old on Thursday, May 21st. Louisa May Baker, the daughter of our colleague, one of my favorite Bloomberg people, Nick Baker, born in Chicago, or at least the suburbs of Chicago, on Thursday. And I know this is a crazy time to have a baby, and I know there's a lot of stress. So welcome to the world, Louisa May Baker. I hope your father gets you an iPhone and subscribes you to the podcast instantaneously.
As soon as you turn 2 weeks old. I think that qualifies.
2 weeks. That's about the comprehension level of our show
these days.
So anyway, let's get to our guest. Very happy to have her on the show. First time on the show. She's also in Chicago. I'm looking at her on Zoom, Sarah, the only guest we've had since February, I think, who's actually in an office and not in some basement somewhere. So that's I don't know why, but that's kind of exciting to me. So welcome her to the show. She's the head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors. Her name is Susan Schmidt. Susan, glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Do you have any birthday shout outs you'd like to make?
You know, as long as we're going that route, I do. One of the guys on my team has his birthday tomorrow. So a birthday shout out to Nick Nikitas, who handles healthcare stocks for us.
Well, I don't think anyone wants to hear any of us sing on this show, especially not me, but happy birthday to everyone.
Right. Happy birthday all. Yes. Save the singing. That would not be a good thing here.
Happy birthday all around. Again, this is the end of the birthday shout outs. Well, maybe we'll get a couple more. You know. All right. So Susan, let's get serious here. And in order to signal I'm getting serious, I'm going to do my best Jerry Seinfeld voice for the first question. What's the deal with this stock market? I got to say, I mean, we're looking at the worst economic data of our lifetimes, countless bankruptcies, jobless claims in the tens of millions, up to almost $40 million, I think, and counting. How do you explain this resiliency in the stock market?
Well, let's tackle that in pieces. So the economic data, yeah, it looks terrible. But it looks terrible because we've basically condensed all of it in all this negative news and negative action into just a couple of months. So we are going to look really bad in terms of GDP, and we are going to look really bad in terms of employment numbers because we basically asked the economy to go on hold. So I'm really looking through the economic data right now. I think the market is certainly looking through it. We understand that, you know, jobless claims came out in the millions again. If we'd had that in a normal environment, yes, it would have caused shock and fear throughout the investment community. But it's not a normal environment. And so we're seeing this large number of unemployed. I think that's being taken as par for the course right now. We understand that we have asked businesses to close their doors, and that's what's happening right now. So the economic data, I think, is you got to take it with, you know, several pounds of salt and recognize that it's abnormal. This is not, you know, we're not normal times. This is certainly not normal data. And the market is really looking past that.
So taking the data with, as you said, pounds of salt, not even grains of salt. But going into this, a lot of people were saying, okay, watch the initial claims data. And I feel like that's what people always say about the economy. It's a leading indicator. It can probably tell you where the economy is headed. Well, now we know that week after week, we continue to get claims data in the millions. We know that it is bad. But to gauge whether or not we are potentially seeing a bottom at some point, what can you watch there? Is there anything you can?
I'm not sure there is anything that you can, because our standard metrics that we've used in the past don't apply right now. So the claims data can be really misleading. How do you aggregate the claims data and then incorporate the PPP plan that came out? And so different employers are, you know, did they get their PPP? Did they not? Are they taking employees that were furloughed or fired? Are they able to bring them back on? So that data is all different. We also had a change in our unemployment benefits. So those that were fired that are collecting unemployment, the cushion for them on unemployment might extend longer. When they come back to work might change. So I think our historic signposts of what we observe to say this is the bottom, we're coming out of it, are no longer applicable. And we really have to look past them. I think you have to be creative. And I think it's more of a feel thing than a numbers thing right now to see when the economy is getting back in its groove.
Right. I think, as you said, you know, the market's sort of looking through the fog to the recovery. Embedded in that is kind of a very optimistic sense that it will be a short recovery. I know we've all heard V-shaped and U-shaped and L-shaped. I feel like
Z-shaped.
You know, it's like Sesame Street. You know, the economy is sponsored by the letter U this week or the letter L. I'm at heart, I'm an optimist. I just can't see a V-shaped recovery in this taking hold. I do not know what letter shape it will be. You know, as far as those jobless claims, there was a story in the Times this week quoting a Stanford economist. And again, with any prediction, any forecast, I agree. I take a pound of salt with it, like my French fries. But you know, this economist at Stanford is saying something like 40-some percent of these layoffs will be either permanent or, you know, somewhat permanent. I mean, even at that 40-some percent, I mean, we're talking about a massive damage to the economy, even if it's, say, 20%, and we're looking at, I don't know, 8 million permanently lost jobs. I mean, that is a scary scenario. Are we due for a letdown in the stock market as the sort of the summer progresses and the fog clears? If not a major bear market, at least some more volatility.
Well, I think volatility is going to be the name of the game here for the next couple of months. I think that actually increases. And, you know, we saw that big downturn in the market, you know, mid first quarter. And that was, I think, a lot of people looking, you know, very short term on how is this COVID-19 going to impact the economy? How is this going to impact the workforce? They could only see 4 to 6 weeks out. And I think what we see now is the market saying, all right, I understand first quarter, second quarter numbers are irrelevant. what really matters here is give me 2021. Let me hear from management teams who fortunately were talking and broadcasting because they were reporting earnings. Let me hear from those management teams on how they think they're going to get through this. And can they get to 2021? You know, how are they handling it all? I think that's given the market a lot of confidence and it's changed the investor's perspective. And so that's why we've seen this look through now to where are we as we go out 6 months, 12 months. There's no question that we've got emotion in this market. And I think you see a whipsaw now and for the foreseeable future, a lot of back and forth because, as Sarah mentioned earlier, if there's talk of a vaccine, there's great joy and, you know, investment coming in, new money, let's go to work, the market's back. If there's not a vaccine, then it's a, oh, well, how long is this going to take again? And we're back to talking about letters. You know, I think the worst thing that could happen is we get a W, right, return. That's not what we want. And so we took a lot of actions up front here to truly put the economy on pause. We're now saying we'll slowly open the gates back up and you can start moving again. And I think it's that gradual return that people are going to be tracking. And it is going to be influenced by what people see. So management teams who are talking about earnings are the best vehicle for information right now on how their businesses are doing. And not only did we pay attention right now, but we're going to be paying attention closely when they're out there in July talking about their second quarter and how do things happen, how do they feel, and more importantly, what do they see for the third and fourth quarter? Because we don't know what's going to happen on the employment front. I think where we're seeing a lot from the publicly traded companies, and I feel comfortable with the publicly traded companies who have access to the public markets for capital. You know, what we really do is feel the pressure on the small business. And this economy has been driven by the consumer. That consumer is driven by employment. And a lot of that employment happens at these small businesses. So I think the market is going to start to tune in on that. And that return to jobs, the return of the small business is going to be an important factor. And I think be the primary thing that the market is going to focus on as we get into the fall.
So you mentioned there that you guys are really awaiting second quarter earnings season, so you can listen to commentary there, maybe learn a bit about what executives are saying about the end of the year, also 2020. In a way, does that mean that we're on just hold right now, that we're going to be stuck in this pattern until we get any more information? Because you also were talking about the markets looking through to 2021. And something I find so amazing is that right now, if you look at analyst estimates for 2021, they just about match what earnings were in 2019 when we had peak earnings for the S&P 500. And to me, it's just very difficult to imagine a scenario where by next year, we're already back at a peak earnings environment.
Right. But Sarah, the fact that you're saying that at all is, I think, what's already in the mindset. Analysts don't want to adjust their numbers numerous times, and they don't have enough data to adjust the numbers. And you know, they're going to be guessing if they take it down to something because they don't know what that something level is. So I think people expect that 2021 to be, you know, I think a lower number. I think they expect those estimates to have to come down. But the market is truly flying blind here. This is an exogenous event that came in from out of the blue. When you have something like this hit, it's a completely different impact on our business economics and how we would value businesses. Because my cash flow that normally is determinant of how I'm valuing that stock today is suddenly on, you know, pause and disruption. So what does it take to resume that? Hopefully, it's only a couple of quarters, a year, and then we're back on track. We don't really know. But again, it goes back to if you're trying to figure out how to value these businesses, the only way to do it with some sense of certainty is, as much as an investor can be certain, is you got to look out longer and longer on that time horizon to try and make your data fit into something that could be real.
Yeah, I was reading the Goldman Sachs. They do that beige book report on their earnings season. Something like 180 S&P 5 companies withdrew guidance. I mean, right. Wow. Wow.
But that makes sense, Mike, because if you weren't withdrawing guidance, what are you guiding on? Right? You're looking into a black hole. You have no idea what's there. And so I actually think that was somewhat comforting to the market as they got used to it. They started hearing this more and more because if management came out and said, all right, I'm changing guidance, and then they change it again next quarter, I think that's an emotional upset again and again. I looked at the companies that we own and the management teams that we heard from, and the ones who withdrew guidance but gave me lots of color around, this is what's happening. We don't know how the numbers are going to pan out, but this is where we think we'll, you know, get to just operationally without attaching numbers to it. Those are management teams I respect a lot, and it gave me a lot of comfort that, listen, they're managing their business through this, and that's all I can ask for right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. It makes total sense, and it is the right thing for them to do. But if I hear a company's withdrawing its guidance, it doesn't make me go, you know what? I'm going to buy that stock right now.
Right.
Maybe it, you know, Sarah, maybe it's because I'm a little bit on the older end of the investor spectrum. I'm looking to preserve what I have rather than take some risk. And Susan, maybe that's a big part of it. It all depends on your risk appetite.
Well, it does. And so what happened with all of this as well, right? Interest rates went back down to zero. And what happened the last time interest rates were at zero? People were forced into the stock market because they had no alternative. So we've seen interest rates go down across the board. You're still looking for an outlet. Institutional investors need to be invested in something that gives them a return. I think there's no guidance for the next couple of quarters, but I've got business models and businesses that I'm pretty sure will still have cash flow as I go forward. And again, I'm looking at, all right, if I can get a free cash flow yield off of a company and it's a positive number, that's ahead of what I'm getting somewhere else. And that's ahead of anything the Treasury is going to offer me. So I hear what you're saying, but I think we had another influence there that is reminding people that your best alternative here is probably going to be equities. And that helped accelerate some of the flow and some of the optimism that we'll get through this.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
All right. So, I mean, we've heard from the Fed. We got 5 minutes out this past week. And I think everyone understands that lower for longer is the name of the game. I mean, interest rates are not going back up anytime soon. If you look at the relative return on bonds versus stocks and you think about where you want to be positioned for the future, how much optimism then can that actually propel within the equity market? It seems like, okay, well, if you have interest rates at zero, does that mean you can just have, I mean, theoretically, and probably not, I mean, an infinite PE multiple on the stock market?
I don't think infinite, but I think clearly higher is what has resulted. And so we're effectively trying to guess at 2021 earnings estimates and attach some sort of multiple to that. I think everything's got to be relative right now. So just as we saw multiple expansion as, you know, interest rates dropped to zero in our recovery from the Great Recession, we are seeing multiple expansion as we're not really sure if you go off on a 2020 number. Undoubtedly, we've seen multiple expansion as these stocks have bounced back. We're up over 30% from the lows. You know, you've really seen that recovery happen in the market. We're down 10%+ year to date. And, you know, there is a confidence in the market. It's not clear what that forward multiple should be, but I do think it's a relative game. Where else am I going to go? Because if I put it in Europe, I'm on a 10-year, I've got negative rates. I definitely don't want that. So I'm, again, being forced back into what's my best option. It's hard to find a positive yield right now. So certainly anything that can give me a positive yield well above zero, even, you know, a dividend yield at 2% right now for a business that you think is going to be able to sustain itself and recover is probably looking pretty attractive to some investors.
So, you know, the perennial discussion we've had over the years, or at least I've had with a lot of people, is, you know, when interest rates start to pick up, what is the level where it sort of spooks the stock market? You know, and years past, it was a, well, was it a 3% 10-year yield? Is it a 4% 10-year yield? I mean, I wonder where it is now. Is it a, is it
1%?
I have no idea. Yeah. That one is really hard. And it seems to have, every time we're back at zero rates, right, now the second time we've done this, we're seemingly at a lower level. I think there's a lot to be driven by people's comfort level around the economy and how the recovery is progressing, just like we saw, you know, just this last time. And so it really is, how does that underlying business feel? How much demand do we have from the U.S. consumer? We have a couple different drivers here. Also, we got manufacturing potentially coming back onshore. You know, so we have business in some respects moving back into the U.S. That could be a positive. We certainly have pressure on small businesses that are going to be moving out or have just been disrupted out of existence. But at the same time, I've got, I think, a pretty resilient base from the large companies who seem to be weathering the storm. And I think the market, who looks at these large publicly traded companies, is taking confidence from the cues they're getting there.
All right. So then in this type of environment, considering relative returns when you look across assets, of course, your team is focused on equities anyways, but what's your team actually doing? I mean, are you guys advising that people be fully invested in this scenario? Should you be a little bit more on the defensive side currently? I mean, what do you actually do, especially after we've seen a nice 35% rebound from the March 23rd lows?
Well, I think that's the hard part right now. So we are invested in equities. And, you know, I have pension funds, endowments, foundations who give me a portion of their endowment, pension fund, trust, whatever it may be, and say, invest this. My job is not to hold cash for them. My job is to invest it and deploy it into the stock market. So, you know, we think that equities do still offer a lot of potential. We're positive on it as an asset class. I think within equities, it's where we move. And we've been really busy. When you have this much volatility, you do see opportunities. And I think that you're able to, as a stock picker, be able to come out of this ahead of the game. So for us, my analysts have been working nonstop digging into the different businesses because you do see pricing dislocations and you find suddenly when you have a dislocation like this in the market, you suddenly have an opportunity to buy companies at a price that, you know, you didn't think was going to be possible. And it may be a business that you think is a great business model. You've always wanted to own it, but we're valuation sensitive, so we were never able to afford it before. And suddenly now I can put that in the portfolio. I think what you end up buying all depends on your time frame. And I think that's where you'll see the difference between portfolios. But I do think there's a lot of opportunity for actual stock picking. And we have not had a lot of environments where you can say that in over the last couple of years. And so the fact that this is coming back to the forefront, I do think that makes a difference. And it's giving us a lot of room in our portfolios to find stuff that we think is going to be, you know, a great place to be for the next, not just quarter, but several years.
I'm glad you brought up the proverbial stock pickers. Some notes you sent around, and I wanted to ask you about that because I think this is a really important point. You say important swings back to active managers who can sort of take advantage of dislocations in the market. I will say, Susan, I've done this job for a while. I don't know how many times I've heard it's time for the return of the stock picker. They're coming back. They're coming. But I will say I do agree with you that this time is different. I mean, if ever there was a sort of fertile ground for more active managers to be able to beat the index, now is obviously the time. But I will say one thing, though, and Sarah had a story. Sarah, I confess, I read the headline. I haven't read the full story yet.
I don't even know what story you're about to say.
But it was about how the Dow average is kind of a dog right now because of the sectors with the heaviest weighting in it. So I would say, you know, an active manager could come to me and say, hey, we're going to beat the S&P this year. Look, we beat the S&P this last quarter. And I feel like people would push back and say, congratulations, but I switched to the NASDAQ 100. Come back to me when you're beating that.
Right. I moved to something else.
Right. You know, is there this risk of sort of benchmark drift into the indexes that better represent, like the NASDAQ 100, that represent sort of those what appear to be havens in this environment, your Facebooks, your biotechs.
I think there always is that tendency to, I want to be invested in what's been successful, so I chase after it. We're seeing a lot of hints as to what the future might hold. We've seen these disruptor industries come into play over the last couple of years, but during this crisis, we've actually seen new technologies be forced to have that uptake ratio increase, right? People have to use them. So I have friends' grandparents who never ordered anything online are suddenly amazed at the convenience of this and look what they can do, right? Finally being pushed into this mode. And I do think that we are seeing a lot of new industries coming into play. The resiliency of the restaurant scene in Chicago, where I sit, has been amazing to me, where when the crisis first hit, as you can see, I'm still in the office, but walking home at night, right, businesses were shuttered, doors were closed. However, now I walk home and there are lines of people outside the different restaurants waiting for pickup. I see Uber cars, Lyft cars, Grubhub, delivery everywhere. And so we're seeing these new industries and new delivery mechanisms pop up. And I think that some of that will stick, maybe not 100%, but it's not going back to zero. So I do think that, you know, we are seeing a shift. If you like the, you know, top 100 in the NASDAQ, you're doing that because you see the power of those businesses. That's not to say there's not something still great to buy in the S&P 500. So it, again, it's really a matter of comfort. The Dow is a tough place to be right now because it is only 30 stocks. Remember what you're getting when you buy these indices. Not everyone looks through it. So I think that's also a cautionary tale. When you buy an index, you better make sure you know what's in it, because sometimes you're surprised and it's not to the positive.
I will say, sorry, I got to interject, though. I got to agree with Susan on the restaurant scene in Chicago. I think I gained 10 pounds the last time I was in Chicago. And I was there for a long weekend. And I think I...
Deep dish pizza or something
else?
We
have a great restaurant scene here. I think it's one of the hidden secrets of the city. People don't appreciate, we have great chefs in the city. And the food
you really do.
Really
totally.
Good.
I ate like 8 meals a day. And I'll say in New Jersey, we're snobby about food. I mean, everyone gives Jersey a hard knock, but we are... We've got a good food scene and we're snobby about it. So that is a compliment to Chicago, a rare compliment for me to Chicago.
Once things get back to normal, we'll all take a trip out to see Susan in Chicago and we'll go eat 8 meals a day. How about
book
that,
it,
Mike?
Book it.
Oh, I've got plenty of places for us to try. So there
perfect.
You go.
Perfect.
It's going on Sarah's expense account, though.
All right. I'll take it. Just for now, but don't hold me to it months from now or whenever that might be. But Mike, something that has been crazy about this whole crisis is the reality that it sped up technological innovation, that we have seen these dislocations across indexes, because although everyone thought that when we had a sell-off, the very large internet and tech companies would lead on the way down, I mean, they're excelling right now. And to a lot of people, it's crazy.
It is crazy. It is part of the optimism that drives the market, right? It's creative destruction. We've seen that before, right? Old business models start to go to the wayside. New business models take share and take over. And so this is, you know, this is one of those interesting moments when you step back and look at a multi-year time frame where you are seeing the technology really infiltrate and force society. The circumstances are forcing society and social norms to change and adapt a lot of that technology. So, you know, I always think that at the end of my career, I'm going to go back and look at these really poignant moments where you saw a shift. And this is going to be one of them without question.
You know, Mike, I queued you up pretty solidly, and I don't think you even realized it.
You did. You did. That was pretty good. That was pretty good.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Susan, I don't know if they warned you about our craziest thing we saw gimmick. I trust you. You came with something. But Sarah, we did get a voicemail in to the What Goes Up hotline. Call now. I feel like Wolfman Jack. Call now.
You should say it like that every time. Maybe more people will call in then.
That's right. Let's give a listen to that.
Hi, I'm Philip from Brazil. I actually work on Bloomberg. I'm calling to What Goes Up and the crazy things that I saw in market. So today is Friday, May 15, and here in Brazil, we are just changed our health minister for the second time in the middle of pandemic in 30 days. So, yeah, that's crazy.
So the second Brazilian health minister in 30 days, not really market related, but I guess everything market is now health related. I guess the two have become inextricably entwined. You know, it's funny because I feel like there's this biotech pharma group of investors who know how to read a press release about a clinical trial. And then there's the rest of us idiots who think, oh, my gosh, a cure. The clinical trial with 8 patients, no one drew a third eye. It's over. You know what I mean? Like,
there is that, you know, it's human nature to want to solve this problem and move past it. So the minute there's a hint of a cure out there, people are leaping on that. It is interesting because even without this, biotech has become a bigger and bigger part of the indices, right? And these companies have really grown. So now we're seeing that continue to, and the repercussions of that continue to move the market, because we have seen huge jumps in things that businesses that I'd never heard of that suddenly, you know, they've got a cure, they've got some sort of solution for this. And it's human nature to want to be able to say that there's a solution and this problem is going to go away. So yes, I do think we've seen that. I think it's too soon to tell. And I know that I am not one of those people who can read those FDA trials and say phase 1, phase 2, this is what it means.
Right, right.
So I'm not going to be able to pick that one company out of hundreds that may get it, but I can think about how that's going to impact the rest of the world and other business models.
Vaccines are the new blockchain.
They're shooting up everywhere. Biotechnology companies.
I feel like McDonald's is going to say, we're working on a vaccine, and their stock's going to double overnight. Like the Long Island iced tea and blockchain company from a few years ago.
Long Island blockchain. I was just about to say that. Read my mind, Mike.
All right, Sarah, time for you to bring it. What's the craziest thing you saw this week?
But first, I do want to remind everyone, after we did hear that voicemail and from Brazil, that no matter what country you're in, you can call our podcast hotline. And that number for you is 646-324-3490. We always love hearing what you have to say, and maybe we'll even play it on the show. So, Mike, first I'm actually going to start with an email that I got. So not a tweet, not a voicemail, but an email that I got
from a
listener. How old-fashioned, right? But because it touches on this biotech topic, and really what's crazy about it was more so the timing of this email more than anything. His name is Phil Siska. He's a managing partner over at Green Mountain Investment Partners. And he sent me this lengthy email about Moderna over the weekend. And he was essentially talking about how the former director of Moderna was introduced last week in the White House Rose Garden as chief scientist, and going on and on about Moderna. And then we all know what happened next. On Monday, the trial news came out. Moderna spiked 20%. And then the next day, the stat news report came out and Moderna dropped 10%. So we'll take the positive as we can right now. But it really is unbelievable. Everyone just having to read stat news, everyone having to really focus on what's going on with FDA trials and try to glean what the outcome might be.
You know, very excellent news source, stat news. I'd never heard of it before of all of this, and I'll probably quickly forget about it once this is all gone, but they are a good source during all of this. So a shout out to them and anyone there having a birthday this week. All right, Susan, you're on the hot seat. What do you have?
Not so crazy, but let's go back to just the what's become routine for us. I saw a market where small caps were up over 6% in one day this week. So, you know, we forget how this is not normal. You know, we forget how different the environment's become right now. And, you know, we talk about these extreme things, but in our regular world, having the market up 6% in one day, That's not normal. That's a crazy thing. And forget that because we're in such a strange environment right now. And so, you know, going back to where we started the conversation, volatility is here. And we've seen it creep up the last couple of years. We've seen moments of it. But I really think the next couple months, because we have all this anticipation, whether it's, you know, Moderna, someone's coming out with a new vaccine, we've got a new cure, the states are opening up and people are fine, nothing's spiked up yet, that easily can be reversed, as we've seen with, well, the trial was only on 8 people and a mouse. And, you know, well, the states did open up, but now we've had a hot spot occur and we've got more cases. So be prepared, because I think that volatility is really here. And again, if I'd heard that there was a 6% up in one day early in my career, I would have said, really? That just seems so extreme.
Right.
And yet now it's become common for us.
Right. It really is unbelievable. And on that same day, I was looking at the equal weight S&P 500 outperformed the regular market cap weighted S&P by the most since 2009. And we're all just sitting here watching our terminals, going on about our day as if it's any other day, because it's just normal right now.
Right.
Mine is, okay, we all know who the famous author Nassim Taleb is. He wrote The Black Swan. He's had a resurgence in sort of his profile because a hedge fund he advises killed it during this whole event because they invest with a tail risk strategy. In other words, really far out of the money options. You guys know who he is, right? All right. And there's another guy we all know, Cliff Asness, the founder of AQR, one of the biggest quant fund groups out there. Well, these two guys got into one of the most ferocious Twitter battles I've ever seen in the history of financial Twitter. And Sarah, yes, you know, there's been some pretty nasty ones.
Oh, yeah.
It's so they and insults back and forth. It all started, Taleb accused Asness of some research that sort of did not treat tail risk hedging with respect he thought it should be treated. And back and forth they went. The insults were so bad, I'm afraid to actually read them on the show. I feel like our corporate attorney at Bloomberg will be on my back if I read them. But I'll give you a couple. And I will point out, both of these guys are absolutely brilliant, among the sharpest minds in the investing world. I will admit I'm not smart enough to do the research and figure out who's right in this debate. But I am confident in my ability to judge a winner in an insult comedy war. And I got to give it to Cliff, because his one comeback was, and Cliff's quit Twitter about 1,000 times a year and come back, you know, to say, and one more thing. But he said, I have to stop now. This is not productive. It's like being mad at a skunk, so you hit it with a tennis racket. So I'm going to award Cliff the winner of this war, at least the insult part. I don't know about the market stuff. Over my head.
Never heard that insult before, but I believe it was Thursday night. This was my bedtime reading. I was sitting on my phone scrolling through Twitter, looking at the insults, just my mouth gaping wide open, and then I tried to fall asleep. So that's the normal day and night these days. So
absolutely. You know, Susan, if you want to insult both of those guys, we could make this thing go viral.
I know. You want to jump into this? I can see. I missed the Twitter exchange there, but I can see how it would occur. And you got different sides of the coin here. We have people who are super optimistic, jumping right back in. You've got investors who are still a little nervous, you know, hanging out on the sidelines. And so I can see how that would go back and forth. I would not step in front of a tweet from Cliff Asness by any stretch of the imagination. Definitely not. And I agree with him. It's not productive because there's no winner. You don't know what's going on. But yes, I have the utmost respect for both of them. And you can see how they both come at it from very different angles.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not going to get in a fight with either one of those guys.
Right.
Me neither. No insults on this show, at least for today, and especially not directed at either of those two.
Well, at least not one that mentions a skunk. So there you go.
Definitely not. But with that said, Susan Schmidt, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. And everyone, enjoy your long weekend.
And happy birthday to that guy. What's his name?
Happy birthday to Michael Gross. That guy, as Mike Regan would say.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me.
What Goes Up will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal website and app, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find us. And you can find us on Twitter. Follow me at Sarah Ponsek. Mike is at Reaganonymous. And you can also follow us on Bloomberg Podcasts at Podcasts. What Goes Up is produced by Topher Forges. The head of Bloomberg Podcasts is Francesca Levy. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.